Thank you very much, Javier, and thank you, Anne, for planning this session, for organizing the session, and for the kind invitation. I'm a little bit embarrassed to be presenting. I'm not really a chemist or a biochemist, and also my lab hasn't dealt with tannins for the past 2 years. Like the title says, it's an on-again, off-again research topic of mine for the past 15 years. So I thought this afternoon I would simply summarize some of the salient points that have come out of these studies, and please note the colleagues that I've been referring to in this talk, Gilles Joannis, Caroline Preston, Nelson Tifo, and Philippe Lebel. So let's start with the context. Forestry is the biggest economic sector in Canada, with net export earnings running at about $38 billion a year. Because of our demographics and the sheer size of the boreal forest land base, forest management practices are said to be extensive. That is, basically we go in, we cut the trees, and we basically let the forest grow back on its own with very few silvicultural interventions. In this context of extensive forest management, soil fertility is largely determined by autogenic factors arising from ecological succession. Black spruce is the tree species with the greatest economic importance. Its wood is not that valuable, it's just that, well, it's there. There's just a lot of it. About 15 years ago, we were invited by Dr. Brian Titus of the Canadian Forest Service to go up to Newfoundland to bear witness to what foresters back then referred to as a black spruce problem. So on many of their cutover sites, black spruce seedlings showed stunted growth, and these were sites that had previously been productive forests. So this is a picture I took on that trip. There's a 16-year-old seedling, and it's not much more bigger than my boot. Dr. Titus had correctly identified the situation as not being a black spruce problem per se, but so much as being a Kalmia angustifolia problem. So indeed, on the sites where growth check occurred, these sites were invariably invaded by this ericaceous shrub. So following disturbance, these sites were low in species diversity, low in productivity, and therefore this can be described as a retrogressive succession. These are individual root systems that we managed to pull out of the ground, and we had them oven dried. It's very difficult to uproot Kalmia. First of all, it's a rhizomatous shrub, so all the clumps are tied together. But even once you've severed the roots, they have this extensive network of coarse roots from which these loose wefts of very tough yet very fine roots occur. And when you look at these closer, you see that the very fine and very tough fine roots are on the scale of about 1 to 2 millimeters in diameter. So given this very high specific root area, the first obvious question that came to us was whether Kalmia interfered with black spruce nutrition through direct competition for forest resources. And this seems to be the case. So here I have shown results a trench plot study where we applied N15 labeled ammonium in these 1 meter squared trench plots comprising naturally occurring Kalmia and black spruce seedlings. And we see that Kalmia is taking up approximately eight times more of the labeled ammonium than black spruce. However, when we look at root biomass in these same trench plots, and this is a log scale, by the way, so Kalmia root mass here is approximately 35 times greater than black spruce root mass. So if we divide the values in the first frame by the values in the second frame, then we see that N uptake by unit root mass is much higher for black spruce than it is for Kalmia. So as long as there's enough ammonium to go around for both species, there shouldn't be a growth check problem, and that's confirmed on fertile sites. You don't see a growth check problem. This suggested that Kalmia's competitive ability would be advantaged if it could somehow reduce soil nitrogen mineralization rates. And these are results from three independent studies that suggest that Kalmia does indeed induce mineral nitrogen deficiency. So in this first frame here, this is net nitrogen uptake by either black spruce or kalmia seedlings over the course of a growing season. This is a pot study, and the seedlings were planted in different types of humus. This is just selected data. Here, this is the humus that was collected under an even kalmia sward. So in other words, the humus was exclusively derived from kalmia litter. And we see that kalmia did okay for itself. That's the right-hand bar in taking up nitrogen over the course of the growing season, whereas the black spruce seedlings actually lost a little bit of nitrogen over that growing season. Here I show the amount of nitrogen mineralized from humus that was taken from a clear-cut site where kalmia covered approximately 18% of the ground. And the other bar on the right, these are adjacent plots, same site, adjacent plots, where kalmia had been removed, manually grubbed for 5 consecutive years. And so you see that just manually removing kalmia for 5 years, there's a 4-fold increase in soil nitrogen mineralization rates. This is forest floor material, I forgot to mention. And here, well, this is the black spruce seedling growth, so a growth assay. So the first bar is plots with kalmia, control plots. The second bar are plots fertilized with ammonium. The third bar is plots with kalmia removed. And the fourth bar, these are fertilized plots with the kalmia removed. So taken collectively, these three studies offer compelling evidence that kalmia litter does indeed reduce soil nitrogen mineralization. However, when we looked at the chemical characteristics of each litter type, nothing at first glance suggested to us that kalmia litter should be more recalcitrant to decomposition and further on to nutrient mineralization. Quite the opposite. If you look at total N concentrations, it's more than twice as high in kalmia litter. Carbon to nitrogen ratios are about twice as low. Total P is about twice as high. We did not measure tannins, but I'll bet you it's pretty lower in kalmia than it is in the very tough black spruce needles. However, we did find 5 times more condensed tannins in kalmia than in black spruce litter. And I want you to pay attention to these numbers. I didn't believe this at first, but Caroline Preston assured me that this was true. 23.5% of kalmia litter dry mass is in the form of condensed tannins. This is phenomenal. So I think after the various talks, most people in the room are familiar now with the general structure of condensed tannins, these flavonoid chains of procyanidin, and the main functional characteristics of these molecules, although there's many functions now I've learned from Anne and from various speakers, is that they bind to protein. This is an interesting figure over here. These are NMR spectra that were generated in Caroline's lab. The top line over here, so let's just keep on the left here. The top line over here, this is the NMR spectrum that we get from precipitates that are formed when we react aqueous extracts of kalmia litter with some generic protein, BSA in this case, okay? Now, hold that thought. This second line here, this is the spectrum just from the protein, just from BSA. And the third line here, this is the spectrum from purified kalmia tannins. So this line in the bottom graph, this line here, the black one, is the same as this black one. We just copied and pasted that one. And this bottom one, this one is generated from adding this spectrum with this spectrum. And you see this spectrum is about identical to this spectrum here. So in other words, what these NMR spectra are attesting to is the purity of tannin protein complexes that may be formed in nature when fresh litter decomposes and comes in contact with the soil proteins. Kalmia and black spruce tannins varied in their chemical structure, the main difference being that kalmia tannins tend to be very, very small, about 2.3 units per molecule, if you want. So we hypothesized that differences in chemical quality would translate into differences in their protein binding capacity. And what we found was that kelmia tannins, especially when we increased the ratio of tannin to BSA, kelmia tannins, this upper line here, tended to precipitate about twice as much protein than black spruce tannins. In other words, 1 gram of kelmia litter should precipitate, or has the potential to precipitate, 10 times more protein than 1 gram of black spruce litter, because it's 5 times more concentrated and twice as reactive. The previous figure was an in vitro experiment. So here we followed up with a study designed to show the effects of kelmia tannins on soil mineralizable nitrogen. So this is the result of an aerobic incubation study. The scale here is a log scale. The first bar is the nitrogen mineralized in a control soil. The second bar, this is when we added protein to the soil, we get 30 times more nitrogen being mineralized. This is when we add just the kelmia tannin alone, and this is when we add the tannins and the protein at the same time, or actually these were the precipitates, the tannin protein precipitates. And so you see that there's absolutely none of this high mineralization when you add the protein as a complex with tannins. Now, it could be argued that these low nitrogen mineralization rates in the third and fourth bars were simply due to higher microbial immobilization. For example, if tannins were to be a source of reduced carbon for heterotrophic organisms. But that's not the case, as we see no increase in soil respiration, nor do we see any increase in microbial biomass nitrogen in soils amended with tannins or in soils amended with tannin protein precipitates. Now, given that soil enzymes are important determinants of nutrient cycling, I attended a really interesting symposium on Monday morning specifically on soil enzymes. Given that enzymes are also protein, we tested the hypothesis that these would be inhibited by kelmia and black spruce tannins. And this is the results of an in vitro study where it's clear that important soil enzymes such as beta glucosidase or acid phosphatase are inhibited by each tannin type. Now, I apologize for this figure. I really don't like the way it's arranged. The y-axis here represent percent enzyme inhibition. So if values go up, that means that enzyme activity is actually going down. Now, this is an in vitro study. So we followed this up with a microcosm study using soils. Here we tried to simulate the changes that would occur during retrogressive succession involving kelmia and black spruce. So we amended forest soil with fresh litter, and we varied the ratio of each litter type that we added to the ground. And so we see that as we increase the amount of kelmia litter relative to the amount of black spruce litter, we see progressively less enzyme activity in the soil, and this over the course of a 46-week incubation. We verified if this could be observed under field conditions. So we went from an in vitro study using purified tannins to this microcosm study using different litter mixtures, and now can we scale that up to the landscape? So we identified 23 recently clear-cut sites with different amounts of kelmia cover. So we estimated percent kelmia cover using transex and quadrats. And on each site, we collected a bulk forest floor sample and measured soil enzyme activities. And we do get this significant negative relationship between kelmia cover and soil enzyme activity. Now, this talk wouldn't be complete if I just mentioned something about nutrient uptake mechanisms by each of the two species. So, following on the work of Gary Bending and people in the UK that they had done in the 1990s, we tested how efficient would be the mycorrhizae associated to black spruce. And so those associated to black spruce are these two ECM fungi here, and fungi associated to kelmia, these two up here. So the gray bars represent the amount of nitrogen taken up from a complete nutrient agar, this MMN nutrient agar. And the black bars represent nitrogen uptake from the same nutrient, agar, where we substituted the nitrogen source, we substituted the ammonium for calmiotannin protein precipitates. And what we see is that there's about a 20% decline in N uptake with the mycorrhizae associated to calmia, and there's about an 80% decline in nitrogen uptake from the mycorrhizae associated with black spruce. So to summarize, there is direct competition for soil resources. Calmia's extensive root system is efficient at taking up a lot of the nutrients. There's also good evidence for indirect competition. Tannins reduce nitrogen uptake or nitrogen mineralization either by decreasing substrate availability or by decreasing enzyme activity. High production of foliar tannins and ericoid mycorrhizal association. These are two traits that improve calmia's competitive ability, we believe, during forest succession. And this question here that I ask, could these two traits alone control ecosystem structure and function? And as a soil scientist, I really would like to believe that. But I have a student now who's more interested in tree physiology than he is in soil science. And he's gone out and he's measured on well-drained sites soil moisture. He found a reduction of up to 15% of soil moisture where calmia was prevalent. So just by removing the calmia, there's an increase of 15% in soil moisture. And he is concomitantly measuring physiological data on the black spruce. And I won't get into this, but what these basically show relationships between foliar nitrogen concentrations and net photosynthesis when you, under field conditions versus when you rehydrate the seedlings, or relationships between specific leaf area and relative growth rate in plots where calmia are removed or maintained. The plant physiologists are telling us that these basically show substantial moisture stress for black spruce seedlings on sites where there's a lot of calmia, on well-drained sites where there's a lot of calmia. So I think the challenge in coming years will be to test the relative importance of my initial phytocentric or pedocentric view of ecological succession based on tannins against these alternative phytocentric views based on physiological responses of seedlings. Thank you. Isn't that what we did?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is the cost, the currency, the carbon currency costs.
I'd have to think about that one. I'm sorry, Jim. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's okay. I have to ask Caroline that. I mean, she just Jill went out twice and worked in her lab. Jill's an incredibly efficient guy, but I still have in my office drawer, you know, files full of tannins, all kinds of tannins. Caroline, you probably know Caroline quite well. I mean, she does a lot of that. She just extracts her and Kevin. They just extracted oodles of tannins and. Precipitates, yeah, precipitates. I'm going to answer and digress a little bit at the same time. The ecology, I think if I just keep going, because I had this in case people ask me, it's about management, but this is not where I want to go. Hang on. You see, a lot of foresters think that it's an early cereal species because they just see it when it gets there. But it's, I mean, all the life history traits of this plant point to the, it's a late serial species. It's probably like the climax species, if you want. So it's small leaves with thick cuticle, recalcitrant litter, tolerant to soil acidity, to shading, established in thick forest floors, high longevity of the established phase, vegetative propagation. This is a late serial plant. And what foresters, so this is like, we went out on this field day and foresters were showing us stand thinning operations in order to favor the growth of the trees that were left behind, so they reduced the number of stems. But if you look at the bottom, what's happened, like they're just creating light conditions and coarse woody debris. They're just creating the ideal conditions to propagate kalmia so that when they clear cut, kalmia just, it's there, you know? So that, I think the climax force of such a, if that exists, is not like this old growth black spruce forest. Is probably an open, ericaceous-dominated woodland.